The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is a story about one man's journey from death row executioner to Lutheran pastor. It's titled The Executioner's Redemption, My Story of Violence, Death, and Saving Grace. You can check it out at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Executioner's Redemption is on sale for $12.99. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, The Executioner's Redemption. Sometimes you see something coming a great distance off. It's kind of a no-brainer if you stop and think about it. The whole LGBT agenda has moved from the courtroom to the bathroom. I started thinking about this the other day. How do you handle a situation, just practically, how do you handle a situation where you have unisex bathrooms at, say, a sporting event? And that got me thinking about sports. And then it got me thinking about a conversation we had with Terry Mattingly some time back where he made a prediction about the NCAA and colleges, especially big colleges with big sports programs that have religious or faith-based codes of conduct. How long would it take for the LGBT rights movement to put that in their crosshairs? Not very long, because there's a recent column about it in USA Today. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about the NCAA, LGBT collegiate athletes, and private religious schools, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So on this show some time back, you predicted a clash between the NCAA and gay rights groups. Just refresh our memories. How did you see that coming?
Well, that definitely, and I think I made the point at the time, fell under the kind of hashtag duh category of predictions. I mean, you could see this one coming a long, long way off. I mean, first of all, let's take this logically. One reason that I think it's so important is that it's a valid complaint from their perspective, and it's also a completely different situation than most of the other religious liberty discussions, you know, that we've been watching and having, you know, in the past couple of years. And what makes all the difference in this is that you're dealing with private institutions. I mean, the NCAA may have the power of many small nations with tiny armies or state governments, but it's still a private association. The NCAA makes its own rules. The NCAA can do whatever it wants. At the same time, currently, the NCAA is made up overwhelmingly of state universities, especially at the elite level. But thrown into that mix are a number of private schools, both religious and secular. We have a tendency to forget the secular private schools, and whether that is, you know, I mean, the University of Miami or the University of Southern California leap into my mind. And these private schools have the ability, as voluntary associations, they have more freedom as to how they can limit the behavior of people who choose to attend their schools. So that's the setup. Now, some of these schools are of a conservative religious nature, and they make rules that kind of say that if you're going to come here, we're going to ask you to follow a certain set of doctrines. Now, this would be very common in Protestant schools, but there are still Catholic schools that have doctrinal statements. There are Mormon schools. There are Orthodox Jewish schools, although none that are in the, you know, at the top levels of the NCAA. Someday in the United States, we will undoubtedly have Muslim colleges and universities, and they will face decisions about how they kind of prescribe the goals of this voluntary association. So all of that is to say the NCAA can do what it wants. These private schools can do what they want. And it was a no-brainer to see that eventually gay rights activists would be able to see that this was a potential chance to bring the powers of B, that in the world of advertising and media and culture, all those these kind of the entertainment industrial complex, you know, that we've seen at the state level in some of the battles over religious liberty, well, here was an even better chance to wield that muscle on behalf of athletes, some of whom who attend these schools and would like to see their school's policies change, which means they have reason to complain. Thus, you have this conflict. So will the NCAA cut off some of these schools that have doctrinal statements, or will it fight against gay rights groups that want to see these schools excluded from the NCAA's private voluntary association, and maybe even will really know this is game on, so to speak, when advertisers begin to get involved in this? Because as you pointed out earlier, there are millions and millions of dollars at stake here, both for the schools and these networks.
So USA Today runs a headline, "When Religion and the LGBT Collegiate Athlete Collide." How did the story go?
Well, I received a lot of mail about this one, and some of them thought the story was pretty good. And they thought the story was pretty good because this was the rare mainstream media piece on a subject related to religion and gay rights, in which conservatives were given quite a bit of ink to state what their policies are. The problem, though, is that early on in the piece, the USA Today itself has stated what it views these schools believe, and that frames the whole story. There's a sentence early on that says a gay athlete who attends a liberal Catholic school, Fordham, who says, you know, "I was born this way. Coming out shouldn't be normal. It's not a big deal." And then we have this, let me read this. "Except there, it is a big deal at many religiously affiliated colleges that see homosexuality as a sin and that have codes of conduct banning same-sex relations. Freedom of religion allows such schools to operate under their own precepts and beliefs, but gay rights advocates say that doesn't mean the NCAA must allow membership to schools that enforce these kinds of codes." Now, the problem with that is that USA Today has inaccurately summarized what these schools teach and believe, at least in almost every case that I'm aware of. What they teach is not that homosexual orientation is a sin. They believe it's a mysterious condition linked to flaws in our world, you know, and brokenness in our creation. A lot of other theological language would get used, but they're not saying that homosexual orientation is a sin. They would say it's a trial. They are saying that homosexual acts are a sin, and thus they are attempting to ban same-sex activity. Now, a lot of them are being very vague about what activity means. Does this mean, you know, actual acts of gay sex, or does this mean hand-holding in public, kissing in the middle of the quad? A lot of these schools are being very vague and are being called out on that right now. But whatever the term relations means in that sentence, the USA Today was very imprecise, to say the least. And for the rest of the story, this definition of what the conservative schools are arguing looms over the whole thing. They also failed to note until much later, when a conservative representative of one of these campuses makes the point, that they actually are prescribing that all sex outside of traditional marriage is sin. So it's not gay sex specific, it's sex outside of marriage, which means this, once again, is really all a debate about gay marriage to some degree.
You mentioned Baylor, but there are a lot of colleges and institutions, almost, what, 1,300 of them, that fall under the NCAA. But I would point out, and you talked about the amount of money there, that I think about, what, 80% of the revenue is men's basketball, you know, Division I basketball, that kind of thing. How does it affect the schools that aren't part of that March Madness, the madness of that, the big moneymaker for the NCAA.
That's a really interesting statistic. I would have thought that college football was bigger than college basketball. But I don't have those figures in front of me. The key, though, is that you're right that men's sports are the massive generator. But in the age of ESPN, there's at least a lot of TV coverage of the other sports and of women's sports going on. The other thing is that most of the schools that have doctrinal covenants exist at lower levels of NCAA competition. What this is really about, and where the axe is going to fall, is the pressure on the few private religious schools that compete at the highest levels of NCAA championship competition. And, of course, that leads immediately to Baylor. That leads immediately to, say, Brigham Young, comes to mind. And most people are going to think about Notre Dame, but at that point, that brings up another issue that's very vague in this story, which is what is the status of Notre Dame when it comes to these issues, and what is its current relationship to Catholic teaching? We can get to that in a minute.
What is it going to do to these schools? I mean, you just mentioned a few that are household names. Where does the story go? You looking at this, having predicted that it would be a story, where does the story end up going?
Well, I mean, to no one's surprise, the issue is whether the loss of the prestige of competing in the NCAA and the millions of dollars to these schools is harder for the leaders of these schools to give up than their own doctrines. And that is a messy conundrum. We've already seen, of course, there are plenty of compromised Catholic schools that have, where the Catholic faith, comes nowhere near the operations of the daily life of the college, and these schools, quite frankly, don't have doctrinal statements. The question here is, will the NCAA fight for these voluntary association doctrinally defined schools to have a right to have their own doctrines, or will the NCAA cast them into outer darkness? It's that simple.
What would Baylor do if it came down to choosing between its doctrines or its the codes based in faith or whatever we want to call them and its association with the NCAA?
So you're asking a Baylor alum here,
yes,
to make a prediction essentially about the future soul of the university that I have 2 degrees from. That's your point here?
Yes.
Well, I will say that I do not know what they would do. The cynic in me says they will compromise. Baylor's, not what it used to be. Baptists have a tendency toward doctrinal fog, as it is, as a lot of Protestants do, and a lot of Christians in general do. However, I would say this. I bet you could sell pay-per-view wrestling tickets for TV coverage of the Board of Trustees meeting that makes that call. That will be really, really interesting television, and at the very least should be on C-SPAN. At the same time, what happens if one conference in America decides that it's going to accept these schools? And then does the NCAA have to kick a conference out because the conference decides to stand together? I think that's unlikely, but you at least have to say that it's a possibility. But at this point, I don't think you can fight Hollywood and all of American industry on this issue. I think the NCAA will fold eventually. What happens at these schools then becomes an interesting issue. Now, I think for the smaller schools, say NCAA, championship level, you realize, is the second level of the top NCAA. This is the college football teams in particular that have a full playoff systems. They're kind of like the mid-majors of basketball, but they don't play in the big conferences. I always think of Appalachian State because I used to live near there, or Furman. These are schools at the second level of the top level. There's kind of a 1A and 1B at the top of NCAA competition. Then you have Division II, Division III, et cetera. I think it's going to be very interesting because this will involve dozens, you know, of schools that are at the center of NCAA competition at the lower levels. I think it's possible that you could see an alternative NCAA form for religious schools and other schools with conscience issues below the NCAA or to the side of it or how wherever you want to put it. I think it's possible that something could develop there, but at the very top level, you know, at the Rose Bowl, Cotton Bowl, national championship level, March Madness, at that level of American sports, this is going to be all the way to the mattresses, to put it in Godfather language, for the gay rights to get these schools kicked out. And my personal prediction is that ultimately they will win.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about the NCAA, LGBT collegiate athletes, and private religious schools. We'll be right back.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the NCAA, LGBT collegiate athletes, and private religious schools. Terry Mattingly is our guest. Terry, we talked about Baylor. We could talk about BYU. That's kind of a whole different kettle of fish. But I want to get to the one that you mentioned earlier in our conversation, and that's Notre Dame. I think the gay rights activists would love to plant their flag in victory there. Tell us whether that's possible or not.
Well, in the USA Today article, they, to some degree, hint or imply that the flag, the victory flag, is already planted at Notre Dame, because they make a big deal out of a video that's been created at Notre Dame on kind of like, we can get along. If you play sports, you can play here. You know, with this kind of pro-gay rights, we are gay-friendly. However, the article never answers at all whether Notre Dame has eliminated any doctrinal covenant at all. And as I put it in my own piece, I'm sure at this point someone at the Vatican might want to know if Notre Dame has any interest at all in whether its students or other members of its faculty, staff, etc., have sex outside of marriage. Is that just a completely moot issue at Notre Dame? And the article never tells us that. It implies that it is, especially contrasting it with the smaller Christian Laterno University in Texas, where someone is allowed to explain their doctrinal covenant quite explicitly. And then it says, but at Notre Dame, it's like this. And, of course, all of this assumes that you can only be a gay-friendly campus if you affirm actual homosexual activity, you know, at the intercourse level, that's what it means to be a gay-friendly campus, and that it wouldn't be possible to have a school that represented that, frankly, that there are gays and lesbians who believe the doctrines of Christianity and believe they're called to celibacy and non-sexual relationships, etc. There are other options here. There just aren't other options in this USA Today article, which is really no surprise.
When the media covers future stories like this, and they will, I think your prediction is right, what do they need to understand about religion?
Well, first of all, I think the key here is it is viewed as absolutely insane in most newsrooms that anybody would choose to live a life in which they don't have sex. That is the very definition of insanity. And it verges on a kind of constitutional right to sexual activity, which, of course, under the privacy granted by the Supreme Court, in a sort of way, there is now a constitutional right to do whatever you want to do, or to develop, in Kennedy's phrase, your own concept of the universe, etc. The real question here is, does this now cancel the ability of voluntary associations to exist? And we see this most explicitly in the battles over campus clubs, where the court has already stated that, you know, at state universities, if you have a Christian club, it must be willing to have non-believers or even people who actively reject the teachings of the club, of the church, or whatever this religious doctrinally defined association is, like a Young Life or Campus Crusade or a Christian Legal Society club, the famous case out in California. They're saying that if you're going to be on campus and you're going to be recognized by the campus, you're going to get any student funds, you're going to be allowed to say that you're a part of our school, you must accept everybody all the way up into leadership. You must accept as potential leaders people who oppose your club. You know, at which point don't you immediately start thinking, now, is that being applied across the board? Is the environmental club being required to allow people who oppose beliefs in global warming to serve as leaders and teachers within its association? Is the Muslim club expected to allow Zionists to compete for membership and leadership positions? Or is this something that now only applies to a uniquely dangerous form of intellectual and cultural thought, which is traditional Christianity and Judaism? Is that where we are? So that's the issue that folds behind here is, will race equal sexual orientation? That's one of the big questions, which the court still hasn't decided. Will it be acceptable in the eyes of media and maybe ultimately government for traditional religious believers to say anything, let alone attempt to build anything based on the doctrines of their faith outside the doors of their church? Or is, at that point, we will be able to say with Secretary of State Clinton a couple of years ago that we now have freedom of worship instead of the free exercise of religion. That's really what this debate is all about. Meanwhile, back at the NCAA can choose to do whatever it wants. It is a free association, and it can choose to punish these schools for their religious doctrines if it chooses to do so.
Pretty big irony, isn't it?
What specifically?
Well, the NCAA can act upon its convictions. But the schools, apparently, they may not allow the schools to act upon them.
Well, they're not stopping the schools from acting on their own convictions. There is no constitutional right to play football in NCAA competition. This is a business transaction between two voluntary associations. So the NCAA has its ball, it has its football, and it's saying, here are the rules if you want to play football with us. The schools get to decide whether the football or their doctrines have the greater priority. And that would be an interesting comment about American life and faith when those decisions start coming down.
Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
Folks, every weekday morning, we stream Morning Chapel from Cramer Chapel live from the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Please be sure to listen tomorrow to Morning Chapel from Cramer Chapel. Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, will be preaching. That's Morning Chapel from Cramer Chapel, weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio mobile app. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening. Talk with you tomorrow on Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.